You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and yes, again, I'm your host. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome, dear brothers and sisters, kinsmen, kinswomen, and welcome, brothers who have not come to the realization, brothers and sisters who are our kinsmen, but do not understand what that really means. Welcome to you as well. Now, right before the show, the Father gave me something that I think is very important for you to understand. Many of you that do not, you hate religion or you dislike religion or you're an agnostic or you're an atheist or this or that, but you're our brother and sister in race. Do you not know there are those of you who have parents that have loved the Father in heaven, Yahweh himself? They didn't know his name, perhaps, but they loved him. And they tried to encourage you to listen to his words and to listen to what they have told you as well. And they watched you grow up. And you have not turned to the Father as of yet. You think there's a better way. But let me assure you, there is a way that seems right to a man, but this leads to death. I want you to take a moment and think of your parents who love you, because your Father in heaven loves you in that same way and is waiting for you to turn to him. He's not waiting for you to turn to any religion or any of that kind of stuff. He's waiting for you to call upon him. And you'll know that if you feel the tug of him calling upon you. Because really, we are drawn by him. So the chances are, if you're listening to my shows, or shows like them that are genuine, and not just the devil wasting your time, you were drawn to this stream with a purpose of being drawn here. You may not know that. You may say, well, I listen to your shows because I like your shows, but I don't believe in the Father, or I don't this or that, or the Jew has taught us through their media to hate Jesus Christ like they do and to not believe like they don't and to hate religion because religion is part of the kingdoms of this world. A relationship with the Father is a different thing altogether. You don't need religion to have a relationship with the Father. But you do need to believe, and you need to have faith. See, if he made it just like, well, the scientist or the Pharisee or the agnostic or the unbeliever says, well, if he is there, let him reach through the clouds and show me he's there. Well, that sounds wonderful, and that's all too easy. But if he did that, you wouldn't need to have any faith, would you? You wouldn't need to pass any test. You'd understand immediately that he's there. You'll find out he's there if you seek him. You'll find out he's there if you love him and you listen to his words and you get chastised by him or something like that. You'll know he's there. There's been times you've needed him in your life already, but you didn't call upon him because you don't believe in him. And I was asked, well, who did you call upon then? The gods of money? I mean, or whatever it is. I don't really know why you would have called on him, but there's many, many, many reasons, a plethora of reasons. But he has been waiting patiently. But the Father's patience, I was praying a little bit last night and talking about how his patience is amazing and how me seeing all this child touching and everything, I would have acted already. And I know it's his great wisdom that he's allowing all these things to go on for a reason. And don't think he doesn't love the little children like I do and care about them. Your parents, I want you to think about your parents. They've been patiently watching you as you've grown up, and they've been waiting and praying for you to turn to the Father, like they have. Perhaps not all of you have parents that have turned to the Father, but there are those of you that I'm talking about that have. They've tried to teach you good things to give you long life. And you are at your age you're at now, and you still haven't turned to the Father because you've been turned against religion. And I told you, religion is not the Father. It's just a question of understanding what I'm telling you. The Jews have been spending a lot of time and a lot of money for a long period of time to destroy Christianity, to destroy the children, to destroy the Father, to kick him out of our country, in all sorts of ways. And they've brainwashed a lot of people and caused a lot of people to disbelieve in the Father. Because they are of a mind of science too. Prove it to me that he's there. Prove it. Go ahead, prove it. Well, you'll notice that he would never bother proving anything to them, because proving something to them would not have anything to do with them having faith. We are saved by grace through faith in what was done in Calvary. You may not understand that it's our race that was saved. It wasn't the world that was saved. Our race had fallen in the garden because of race mixing and disobedience. And the Father decided that he would, and had told them in the future, that he would redeem our race. He didn't say he'd redeem Chinamen or Negroids or anything else. He said he would redeem our race because we are his literal offspring. So your parents have been waiting and waiting, and many of them will grow old and die, and they'll still be waiting on the day of their death, but will never see you come and turn to the Father. And you realize if you do love your parents, there's a reason they want you to love the Father. There's a reason why they want you to hear his words. They know something you don't know. And they were trying to impart this goodness upon you. They might have understood it as religion too, dear fellow and dear woman. But they've been waiting. Will you ever come to the realization of who the Father really is and that he's your Father? And that even your mother and father, he's their father too, if they're pure Adamic race? Let me read you something, and maybe you don't like to hear the scripture. Maybe you do. I do. And listen to this advice from Proverbs 6. And take it to yourself. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom, and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals, and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her, shall not be innocent. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man, and therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. So your mother and your dad on this earthly planet have taught you many things throughout your life. And these things, if you bound them about your neck, would save you many sorrows, many shameful sorrows, many tears, many heartaches. When it says the law is light, it sure is. But don't confuse that with today's justice system, because that's not the true weights and those are false weights and measures, which the Father says is an abomination to him. Today's law system is not light. It is the light of Lucifer, the light of lies, the light of false witness, the light of false weights and measures. Now let me just go to the next chapter very quickly. And he's speaking to you still here. If you believe the Father is your Father, and he is, if you're a pure white Adamic man or woman, whether you know it or not. My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers and write them upon the tables of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman. Well, it's funny that I use those terms. I don't usually, and there it is. That they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger with flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot. That's an harlot. And subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. You'll notice many Jewesses are loud and stubborn, don't you? Now she is without, now in the streets, and lieth wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day I have paid my vows. Therefore I came forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. Diligently, see? She's busy. She's at work, seeking his face, seeking to whom she may devour, you understand? The devil says, when the father asked him where he was, he says, I was walking to and fro upon the earth, seeking to whom I may devour. Well, the devil and woman have a special relationship, obviously. It happened that way in the garden. And it still is that way. But not all women. There are women that the father has reserved for himself. You see, she came forth. Like the devil said, I've gone to and fro, or, you know, seeking to whom I may devour. Well, this woman said, therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. And when she found him, she lieth at wait at every corner. You see what I'm saying? She caught him and kissed him. Now, the same thing these blacks are doing today, and these Muslims, and et cetera, they are going to and fro seeking to whom they may devour, are they not? And they are devouring, aren't they? Aren't they feeding the grave? Aren't these women feeding the grave? For the grave is insatiable, excuse me. You understand that? It never can get enough. And hell is increased every day. But one day, according to Revelation 15:12, I believe it is, these people will be swallowed by the grave that are doing this to us at this point. See, the devil has many, many ways that he is devouring. He's seeking. He's walking to and fro upon the earth, seeking to whom he may devour. And this type of woman and those beasts of the field are doing the very same thing that the devil does. See, this was done in the twilight, verse 9, get it, 9, the devil? In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark. This is where this woman was. He was going, passing through the street near her corner, and he went that way to her house. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. So she continues, I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works. Hello. Get it, carved works? I bet that means gods. It's funny, I've read these things many times, and yet, again, I understand things much more this time than I did before. With fine linen of Egypt, I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. For the good man is not Good man is not at home. He is gone on a long journey. Notice how the good man is out on a journey, and he's trying to do something good for his home and his household. And in the background, the bad woman is doing things like she's doing. You understand? This is the curse that we have had since the garden with women. It's funny that the father had said it's not good for man to be alone. But sometimes you say to yourself, I'm not so sure about that. But I'm sure the father knows what he's talking about. I know that I shall stay alone for the rest of my life. The father's made that clear now to me. I shall not go on a long journey to try to find the bad woman. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. You see, he let her know everything. He said, I'll be home at such and such a time, and she can count on him. For he's a good man, she says. The good man is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. Listen to this wording carefully. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. I like it. I believe it says it differently somewhere else. Not that it is for his very life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. I hope you're listening, and perhaps this little mini speech here before we go into the compare part of things, perhaps this will save your life. This is a warning. I told you hell is increased. Well, hell is increased by a woman like this. You see, she caused him to yield. Let's look up the word yield. We've heard it many times. Produce or provide a natural agricultural or industrial product, to give way to arguments, demands, or pressure. She forced him, it said, right? So she was arguing with him and going against everything he had been taught as a man. Well, hopefully he had been taught, but he yielded unto her. He gave way to the arguments, demands, or pressure. Synonyms: surrender. To yield is to surrender, to capitulate, to submit, to relent. You don't submit to the woman submits to you. That's the first problem. To yield, to admit defeat, accept defeat, concede defeat, back down, to yield. Too many people are yielding to the Jews. They're apologizing for things that they believe and say. If everybody stopped yielding and accepting defeat like that, we could end this very quickly. To give up the struggle, to lay down one's arms, that's to yield. The white flag, to yield, to knuckle under. In other words, he came under her thumb instead of a woman being under his thumb. He's not supposed to be messing with this woman in the first place, you realize, right? This woman is a married woman. She's an adulteress. She's hunting for the precious life, it says. She came forth to meet him diligently. Again, we were talking about the word diligently, a friend and me, or a friend and I. Let's just look at it. In a way that shows care or consciousness in one's work or duties, he spends his nights diligently working on his dissertation. See, she was working for the devil diligently. She cared about destroying these men's lives. This was her work and duty. And her conscientiousness. She was diligent. Let me just see. Synonyms: active, assiduous, bustling, busy, employed, engaged, hopping, and industrious, laborious, occupied, sedulous, tied up, working. Antonyms of diligence would be idleness or idle, inactive, unbusy, unemployed, unoccupied. She was seeking to whom she may devour. And it tells you that she have cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. You may think that's humorous. I don't. For if these strong men had listened to the warnings of the father and the warnings of her parents, they would have not been wounded and they would have not yielded. Let those in hell stay in hell. Don't let them bring you in with them. For this is what they seek. The devil knows that when the judgment comes, he's already judged. It's over with. The Jews know the same thing. They know it's over with. There is no eternal life for them. They're pretending they're the Israelites of the Bible, but they're not. They have no path, no covenant with the Father. They are not his offspring. They are the devil's offspring. And they all know where they're going to be ending up. They already have one foot in hell. But they've all said that they want to take you all with them. Or should I say us all with them? But I wanted to make it real personal. You all. No, not you all. You all. If you yield to her, you haul your way into hell. But this isn't the only way that someone is going to and fro upon the earth seeking to whom they may devour. Let me read this to you too. This is from Matthew chapter 23. Listen, I want to tell you that the scribes and the Pharisees are Jews, and I want you to understand that the priesthood and the government were all in one. That's why America was to have separation of church and state. Do you understand that? Well, these Pharisees were Jews. They were not white men. They were not Israelites. But they were put in the priesthood, the scribes and the Pharisees. Now listen to what the Father in the flesh, Jesus, Yeshua, says. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Do the Jews sit in Moses' seat today? They say they do, don't they? Don't they? I've heard it just within the last couple of days. Verse 3, all therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. Just like the Teflon rabbi who is a Pharisee. You understand, they said that they took me out biblically, but they did not. They said this and they said that, but none of that was true. So what he's saying here is these people are teaching you things to observe from the scriptures, and he's saying that observe and do. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. Think about that first, right? Listen, for they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Move them what? Those heavy burdens and grievous to be borne and laying them on our shoulders. They don't do these things, but they want to lay these things on us, these heavy burdens. Verse 5, but all their works they do for to be seen of men, but all their works they do for to be seen of men. You think about that. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garments, and love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplace and to be called of men Rabbi, Rabbi. And that's exactly what it says right here. But be not ye called Rabbi. See, Rabbi means master. Now, some people would say, oh, no, it means teach. No, it means master. Because he says, but be not ye called Rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ. And all ye are brethren, and call no man your father upon earth, for one is your father, which is in heaven. Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is the greatest among you shall be your servant. And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that humble himself shall be exalted. That's one of the biggest biblical principles, whether it's in the older part of the Testament or the newer part of the Testament. You see, they exalted themselves into the highest seat. And what the Bible would teach you, and it might even say it here, I'm not sure, but if you went into a feast, you would sit in the lower seats and let somebody bring you up to the higher seat. See, this is how I have proven to you that the Jews are not the tribe of Judah. They're not the tribe of any. They're not of any of the tribes. These Pharisees went and sat in Moses' seat. You understand this? They took the highest seat that there could be at that point. They took the high seats, they love all the show of everything, the show of giving a coin, the show of works, the show of everything. You see, the tribe of Judah is the top tribe of the tribes of Israel. It has the scepter and the crown. The Jews don't claim to be the other tribes. They claim to be this top tribe, the tribe of Judah. All the other tribes have just disappeared. This is how you should be able to know that they are not the tribe of Judah. Because they don't understand these biblical principles that you take the lower seat and let somebody put you up into the higher seat. You see, that's what it says. And whoso, verse 12, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased. In other words, after pride comes a fall. After you try to exalt yourself, you will be humbled. You will be brought down. But he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. So if you were one of these high muckety mucks in the Israelite government, which are Jews, it's the same way today in our government here. If you had taken the lower seat, somebody would have come up to you and said, oh no, this is too low for you. You must sit up here with the higher muckety mucks. But listen, verse 13, but woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you filthy Jews, hypocrites, for ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. What did I just tell you? That they have one foot in hell. This is amazing. Praise you, Father, for all the things you do. They have one foot in hell, and they know that they're not going to enter into the kingdom of the Father, his kingdom. But neither do they want you to enter in. I just told you this, didn't I just tell you this a little while ago? Now listen, listen again to this, and this will show you. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make a long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Let me speak about that as well. There's no need to make long prayers. Prayer isn't how many words you speak. If you speak a 1,000-word prayer, it's not any better than a 10-word prayer. But listen, ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense, make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. So there's a greater damnation here, we see, huh? He continues. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, Jews, that is, Edomite Jews, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, he's saying, which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? That's what he's asking them. Well, of course, you know the Jews think the gold is, right? Because that's one of their gods. And he says in verse 18, "And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gift that is upon it, he is guilty. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar sweareth by it, and by all things thereon. And whosoever shall swear by the temple sweareth by it, and by him that dwelleth therein. And he that shall swear by heaven sweareth by the throne of God," or Yahweh, "and by him that sitteth thereon. Wherefore, ye scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, and not to have left the other undone. Ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel." You see, I've had a brother tell me, "Well, I don't cut the corners of my beard." But there's weightier matters that he has ignored. I just realized this at the moment. Do you think that the Father is really going to put you in hell if you trim the corners of your beard? Or would he put you in hell for ignoring the weightier matters? The things that are more important, like judgment, law, mercy, and faith. Mercy. "These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone." You see, many people are concerned with the small details, but let the big details sway in the wind. And they think, "Well, I'm so anal about this thing that I want to obey the Father that I won't cut the corner of my beard." But they ignore all the other things. You understand? "Ye blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also." You see, the outside is like the body. So they wear these garments and make a show and do works and do all sorts of things that are outward things that the physical people can see and say, "Wow, look at these wonderful, wonderful priests." But they didn't take care of what was inside of themselves. They strained at a gnat and swallowed a camel. You understand? I've been talking about this scripture for quite some time now, this straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. I love it. But you know something? I have such a much more understanding of it now, this time through in this chapter. It's blowing my mind. See, he set it all up in the first when he told them these things. See, they want to be called master and all these things when inside they're full of dead men's bones. They're full of filth. They're full of excess. They're full of extortion. But on the outside, they look awful good. You see, they like to sit in the high seats. They enlarge the borders of their garments. This is all outward stuff. That's the cup, you see. And they want to be called master. That's praise. They want to be worshipped. You see, when you call somebody master, you're worshipping them for their capabilities, their outward capabilities. But he tells us there's one master, even Christ. But they tell you, no, we're master, and they want you to call them master. They exalt themselves, but will be humbled. They're still doing this today, exalting themselves. One of the ways they would exalt themselves, like by calling Jeffrey Epstein a billionaire, when he's not really a billionaire. It's amazing what I'm seeing right now in this chapter. I mean, this is blowing me away. The father is absolutely remarkable. That's all I can tell you. He is remarkable. See, a gift on the altar is like the outward thing, or the gold on the altar is an outward thing. What's more important is the inward thing, the temple, and who is in the temple? The Father's in the temple, right? Because he says this, and he that sweareth by heaven, or swear by the temple, sweareth by it, and by him that dwelleth therein. See, these Pharisees aren't interested in who dwells in the temple. They're interested in the gold and the gift. And he that shall swear by heaven sweareth by the throne of Yahweh, and by him, Yahweh, that sitteth thereon. You understand? So here they are, and they're saying, well, we pay our tithe of mint, anise, and cumin. So they go out and pay a little tithe, which they have so much money anyway. It doesn't matter, right? And then they have omitted the most important part, the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. So understand that the law has judgment, mercy, and faith. And this is where I got the balances. The law will show you their icon is a balance, a weight balance. And it's supposed to be judgment, and what balances the scale is the mercy. The judgment is the Father, and the mercy is Yeshua. And, of course, our faith in both. See, if it was only the judgment, we're all dead. We're all gone. His mercy is what balanced the judgment. For the judgment is a harsh judgment. It's very, you know, you get what you deserve. If you have sinned, you're done. But with the mercy, it balances that out. And that judgment that was so harsh has been taken care of, let's say, has been paid in full. The crime that the judgment has, that the law has exposed and has brought to judgment. Judgment demands that something be paid for this crime. And Yeshua paid for this crime, Yahweh in the flesh, with his own blood. And it was a mercy. So that mercy is what balances the scales. Right now, there is very little mercy in the judicial system in our world, and what there, and even in his time, because he's saying they have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye have to have done, and not to leave the other undone. So he's saying you should have paid the tithe, but you left this other stuff undone. You see, there's mercy towards today, there's mercy towards the evil people, like the blacks that are killing people. They'll let them out. They'll let them kill some white man and give them 9 years or 3 years or something like that. And that's a mercy, you see. But they'll take Dylann Roof and put him to death, which is pure judgment. You understand? So he says, " Yeah, right here. Thou blind Pharisee, clean first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Do you understand what he's saying, right? They strain at a gnat and swallow the camel. That's another way of devouring the wrong thing. A gnat is a very small thing, and our people, our white race people, love to strain at a gnat. They love to pick out the little detail. You could be giving a whole hour and a half show, like, and they wouldn't say, well, you know, this is all wonderful what you said. They would just say, they'd rather say, well, you know, I didn't like this one thing you said. They strain at a gnat. But the Jew gives them all this stuff and they swallow the whole camel. The Jew gives them all this hypocrisy and all this outward, all these outward signs, like the smile. The Jew uses the smile as a weapon. I've talked about this in times past. And the smile as a weapon gives you a message that you have felt in your life many times. It's another feeling thing, right? And when you smile, it means you thought something was amusing or you were full of joy or you were happy, etc., 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 right? And so when the Jew uses the smile all the time, you think, well, if he's smiling, he must be happy. And you think you're happy because he's smiling. It's a brainwash. It's an outward thing. But you don't understand what's inside of that creature. You're only looking at the outside of the cup. You don't understand what's inside that cup. It's the same that's inside these cups here, these Pharisees and scribes. And you better believe that the Father would know if these people were righteous or not, right? In other words, ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so ye outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! How many times has he said the word hypocrite to these Jews, Edomite Jews? Are they any different today than they were in his time? Are they not still the biggest hypocrites on the planet, calling everybody else racist when they're the biggest racists on the planet? Calling everybody else slave owners when they are the ones that ran the slave trade and took the black slaves? Calling everybody else haters when they're the biggest haters on the planet? And I could go on all day about that, right? Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because ye build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous. And I say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would have not been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Whereof ye be witnesses unto yourselves, that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers. How can ye escape the damnation of hell? You see, he knows they can't. They're trying to lie and say, well, you know, whatever was would happen to the prophets with the killing of the prophets in those days. In other words, build tombs of the prophets and they garnish the sepulchres of the righteous. So what they do is they make a big ado about these prophets and say, well, they were wonderful, wonderful prophets and this and that. And if they had lived in those days, they would have never been partakers with those that killed those prophets. But see, he knows they're liars and they're hypocrites. He called them serpents, very right. And who is in the garden that was judged and told she mixed with, he mixed with Eve, the serpent in the garden. And the father said, your Zerah, your offspring, your seed line, will be at enmity with her, speaking of Eve, her seed line, her Zerah, her offspring. You see, her offspring was Cain too, right? And that offspring is who became this generation of vipers. So the serpent in the garden is not a serpent as far as it's still a human looking being like these Jews were in the time of Yeshua. You understand? The serpent in the garden is the same as these serpents standing before him, these Edomite Jews, the progeny of Cain. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers. And he puts that as a lower F too. Ye serpents, ye generation of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell? And he continues, wherefore, behold, I sent unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city. That upon you, listen very carefully, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel, unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Berechias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. Now they must have been saying, how did he know we did that? But understand, he's saying, these people weren't alive when Abel was alive, this particular generation of vipers. But he's saying that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Berechias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. That was the John the Baptist's earthly dad. Verily, or truly, I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. So that's a prejudgment of the judgment that will be to come. You understand? Oh, now this was the verse that I wanted in this whole thing here to speak to you that have not turned to the Father, who do not understand that the Father is your Father and that you are his offspring. He's speaking, when he says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, he's speaking to the Israelites, not to Jews. See, the Jews were with us in those things. They actually, Edom was below Israel back then. And yes, these Jews, these Edomite Jews, were put in the priesthood. But the Father is saying, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. In other words, oh, my children, not Jews, though. Thou that killest the prophets and stoneth them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. You see, the Father's been waiting for you, you that are his true children, but do not understand this. He's not waiting for you to join a religion. He wishes to gather you. When he says gather you under the wings, he's just talking about how a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings. He would have gathered his children together, but they would not. He's saying, and ye would not. So he's waiting for you in the same way your parents have been waiting for you to turn to him. And in verse 38, he said, behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of Yahweh. So this house of Jerusalem is desolate. These so-called Jews have pretended they are us and have gone back to Jerusalem, but it's a wasteland. They have to bring in the water. They have to do all kinds of things because it's desolate. And with them in it, it's twice as desolate, isn't it? So it's a cursed land until he returns. For he says, ye shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of Yahweh. Let's take a little break. And I'll play one of my songs from the To Begin to Destroy album.
Now listen, baby, 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 won't you listen? I'm waking up in tune. We must apply, apply, apply the countermeasures. It's got to be real soon. The world is shaking, and in their boots they will be quaking. They worship sun and moon. They dress in robes and dance around the owl's fire. They worship money too. You know you gotta change your tune. No time left to be fools. You know you gotta change your tune before we all end up in twos. You know there's people, you know you never heard of, because their name's not news. You gotta watch out, because there's so much information. You got to pick and choose. Watch out for liars, we will identify the traitors. They're gonna get the news. Come on now people, let's learn to work together, or learn to sing the blues. You know you gotta change your tune. No time left to be fools. You know you gotta change it too. Before we all end up in twos. 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 Yeah. I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make a big emotion. We're gonna make up time. You know this 30. 30 miles of trains down by the New York line. The cars are empty, empty all around the nation. Oh, can't you see the signs? Remember old Rex, Rex number 84. It's gonna blow your mind. You know we gotta change our tune. No time left to be fools. You know we gotta change our tune. Before we all you know we gotta change our tune. There's no time left.
Welcome back to the Saxon's Creed Radio Show here at davidjamesboston.com. If you like what I'm doing and you can see fit to give back something, you can go to davidjamesboston.com and there's a donation link up there. I hope you will act upon that, for it's right to give back. I care about you. I know that you're waiting to hear these shows. I'm sensitive to that, and I try to get them out as quick as I can for you so that you have ample feeding, so that you have the knowledge that you need to make the right decisions in your life. And that's all I'll say about that. Now, listen, we're going to go into another Compere teaching here, which I'm going to continue on these Compere teachings. And I told you the reason why is because I think it's even more audible when I speak it. And I can comment on it as I speak it. And you really get the whole message. Whereas in the recording, sometimes you can drift off and sometimes they're not as audible as they should be. I've cleaned them up to the best of my ability, but that's how it is. So this one's called The Bible is Not a Jewish Book by Bertrand L. Compere. Are you ready? Even those who should know better, that we Christians owe a debt to the Jews, for we got our Bible and our religion from them, commonly make that statement. While many people have been deceived into believing this, it is completely false. You got that, right? You see, the world and the Jews teach you that Christianity was spawned out of Judaism, correct? This is me commenting about what he just said. Judaism is anti-Christ to the core. It is anything but Christian. It is anything but Israelite. It is the opposite of all good. And the pagans who think that we've been brainwashed by the Jews do not understand that the Talmud is very pagan and that it has many, many, it's pantheistic. It's not monotheistic. There's not one God. It's many gods. Pantheism. And it's very, the Jews are very pagan. You see, May Day has many connotations. May Day is the pagan holiday. It's also the day that the Jew Illuminati was created through Weishaupt. And it's communism. Has to do with communism. And this is just like the Talmud. It's everything pagan. It's everything anti-Christ, anti-God. And it's evil. Pure evil. So they tell us that Christianity or the scriptures came out of Judaism. It was spawned by the Jews. This is a complete lie, complete trickery, another fable. And so let me start it again. Even those who should know better, that we Christians owe a debt to the Jews, for we get our Bible and our religion from them, commonly make that statement. While many people have been deceived into believing this, it is completely false. Part of the mistake comes from the complete confusion in the minds of nearly all people as to just what they mean by Jew. Are they referring to a people of a certain race? Or are they referring to a people of a certain religion? For the two are not the same. There are in Africa today some pure-blooded Negroes who are Jews by religion. And there are in China today some pure-blooded Mongolians who are Jews by religion. Likewise, there are some people today who are racially of the stock we know as Jews, but who have not converted to other religions, have been converted to other religions. I have talked about this. This is the Jewish question, whether they are a race or a religion. And the answer to that is they are neither a race nor a religion. They are a race-mixed mob of people. And I've explained so many times that their so-called religion is just what I just told you in the Talmud. They are a criminal mafia cartel, worldwide cartel, and they pretend they are a religion. Why? Because of the many advantages that religions have. So if this criminal cartel can say it's a religion, it can get away with a lot of things. And that's why. So the article continues. First, let's consider the claim we got our Bible and religion from the Jews, as meaning Jews by religion. It is certain we didn't get the newer part of the Testament from them, for it condemns the Jewish religion throughout all the newer part of the Testament. He uses, of course, those terms you know. But did we get the older part of the Testament from them? No, for several reasons. In the first place, no Jew by religion existed before the return from the Babylonian captivity, shortly after 536 BC. Their great historian, Josephus, writes, "So the Jews prepared the work. Jew is the name they are called by from the day that they came up from Babylon," unquote. Again, "So the Jews prepared the work. Jew is the name they are called by from the day they came up from Babylon." Funny how he says their great historian Josephus. The only books of the, because I believe Josephus was not a Jew. But they do show on the cover a big hook-nosed fellow. Anyway, the only books of the older part of the Testament that were written after the return from Babylon are Kings, Chronicles, Ezra, and Nehemiah, all of them historical rather than doctrinal. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So, in none of these do the Jews receive anything but rebuke for their wickedness, for their apostasy from the religion of the older part of the Testament. He calls it religion. The late Rabbi Stephen F. Wise, formerly the chief rabbi of the United States, said, "The return from Babylon and the introduction of the Babylonian Talmud mark the end of Hebrewism and the beginning of Judaism." The learned rabbi was correct in distinguishing the true religion of the Older Testament as Hebrewism, for it was the religion of the real Hebrews, who were not Jews at all. Judaism, the religion of the Jews, is as the learned rabbi says, based on the Babylonian Talmud, which is called the Bavli, which I added that in, which contains the supposed oral law. It was never reduced to writing as part of the scriptures or the Bible. This oral law gradually gained greater force among the Jews than the written law in the Bible, with which it is often conflicted. In Yeshua's day, the Babylonian Talmud was known as the tradition of the elders. This is why Yeshua told the Jews, "Well, hath Esaias prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written? This people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. for laying aside the commandments of Yahweh that ye might keep your own tradition? Making the word of God of none effect through your tradition which ye have delivered. Mark 7, verse 6 through 13. And he says, ye do error, not knowing the scriptures, nor the power of Yahweh. Matthew 22, verse 29. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Wow, amazing. For ye pay tithes of mint, anise, and cumin, and have omitted the weighty matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Matthew 23, 23. I'm going to tell you the truth here, which I always do anyway. But I'm going to tell you something that's funny. Since I used so much time on that, on the beginning of this show, I was going to do a different compare than this. So what I did was I went up a few and just picked this one, and I didn't know what was in it. And here you have a link to what I've already been teaching today. You make of it what you do. I know what I make of it. I'm so pleased with the Father. I don't know how these things happen, but they certainly do. See, this is a shorter one, so I had to pick a quick, shorter one because we don't have enough time. This was the religion of the Jews. As the learned Rabbi Stephen F. Wise said, Judaism, as distinguished from Hebrewism, the real religion of the older part of the Testament. Certainly Christianity took nothing from any Jewish religion, for we have never taken any part of Christianity from the Talmud. Naturally, the Jews didn't give us the newer part of the Testament either, for it completely repudiates and condemns the Jewish religion of the Talmud. Can it be said that we got our Bible and our religion of Christianity from men of the Jewish race? No, it cannot. I haven't the time in the remainder of this lesson to give the Bible evidence in detail. I will have to reserve that for a later lesson. It can be clearly proven, both out of the historical books of the Bible and out of only throughout history of the times written by one living when the facts were still well known. Josephus's Antiquity of the Jews, quote unquote, tells that the Jews were a distinct and separate from Yahweh's people Israel, although living among them. The Jews were the Canaanite people who lived in Palestine before Israel entered the Promised Land and who were not driven out. These Canaanite people were mixed offspring from the intermarriages with the Israelites. They were allowed to remain in the land while paying heavy tribute taxes by John Hyrcanus, you see. I just added that in so you'll know. The prophets who wrote the books of the older part of the Testament were all pure Israelite stock from one or another of the 12 tribes of Israel. Moses, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Habakkuk, Haggai, and Zechariah were of the tribe of Levi. Joshua and Samuel were of the tribe of Ephraim. Isaiah, Daniel, and Zephaniah were of the house of David. Jonah was of the tribe of Zebulun. Hosea was of the tribe of Issachar. When the Assyrians conquered and deported the people of the 10 northern tribes, the Bible records that the Assyrians brought other people in from the Assyrian Empire and settled them in Samaria, in place of the Israelites they had deported. Samaria is the only southern half of the territory occupied by those 10 northern tribes. The northern half was Galilee, and this was left vacant when the kingdom of Judah was later deported to Babylon for their 70 years captivity. Their land was left with very little population. While they were gone, the Edomites, these Jews, who are the descendants of Esau, mixed with the Canaanite people, were forced out of their own land by pressure of invading Arab tribes and moved westward into the vacant lands of Judah, occupying the southern half of the former kingdom of Judah. Therefore, when a portion of these two tribes of Judah and Benjamin returned from the Babylonian captivity, there were too few in numbers, to drive out the warlike Edomites and had to tried to squeeze into very little territory they had left. It was too small for them. So what was left of the tribe of Judah took the little territory remaining around Jerusalem, and Benjamin was pushed to the north. They could not move next door into Samaria, as the people the Assyrians had settled there occupied this area. Benjamin had to leapfrog over them into the vacant territory of Galilee. The apostles and the majority of Christians converts came from the Benjaminites should not surprise us. When the kingdom was split in two upon the death of Solomon, Yahweh said he would leave Benjamin with Judah so that the house of David should have a light before them. In the New Testament, in the newer part of the Testament, Mr. Comperé, all of the apostles were of the tribe of Benjamin except Judas Iscariot, the only Jew amongst them. Judas came from the village of Kerioth in southern Judea. Iscariot is a corruption of Ish-Kerioth, man of Kerioth. Paul tells us that he, Paul, was of the tribe of Benjamin, and all the other apostles except for Judas Iscariot were from Galilee, where the tribe of Benjamin settled after the return from Babylon. Yeshua confirms this. In Matthew 15:24, he said, "I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel." In John chapter 10, Yeshua tells the Jews, "I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and I am known of mine. But ye believe not because ye are not of my sheep. As I said unto you, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." From the Savior's own lips, we have the proof that the Jews are not of the tribes of Israel. Note carefully that he does not say that their unbelief keeps them from being of his sheep. He says the exact opposite, that the reason why they do not believe is they are not of his sheep, the house of Israel. You see? Christianity and Judaism are completely irreconcilably inconsistent. Whichever one is right, the other must be wrong, for they mutually repudiate each other. A great part of Yeshua's reported words are his denunciation of the Jews for their religion, which he tells them is not that of the older part of the Testament. In John 5:46, Yeshua told them, "Had ye believed in Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me." In Luke 16:31, Yeshua said, "If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded through one who rose from the dead." He was right. He did rise from the dead, but on that day, they are not persuaded. And I mean, to this day, they are not persuaded. They still are Antichrist. It is therefore clear we did not get either our Bible or Christian religion, either in whole or part, from those who were Jews, either by religion or by race. We owe them no debt, for they gave us nothing. And that is the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Comperé calls it religion, but I don't. We are to have a relationship with the Father. We see that all that religion has done has divided us up. If we were all having a relationship with the Father, there would be no way to divide us up. Words are what divide. Words can put fear. Words can interject doubt. Words can confuse. Words can corrupt. Therefore, we need to be particular about what words we believe. Because we cannot control what words we hear necessarily. For words are always spoken because there are too many voices in the world, as the Apostle Paul had said. You see what I'm saying? You must be able to divide the word correctly. You must be able to study to show yourself approved. You must be able on your own to defend yourself. If you were going to be a lawyer in a common law court, you'd have to learn how to defend yourself. It's the same way with the word of the Father. You must be able to rightly divide the word. The word of Yahweh. You must understand it. You must be able to defend it. You must be able to stand by it, to understand it, and you should be able to wield it as a sword, a two-edged sword. This does not come in a day. For at first, when we first are babes, we drink the milk of the word of the Father. But in time, we eat the meat of the word of the Father. And when you know what meat is, you know how to divide it, right? You know that there are some meats that are not equal with other meats. Words are like meat. They are something I would say to you, well, chew on that idea. Chew on that. Taste it. Test it. When you chew a piece of meat, you test that piece of meat. And you think about it, and you come up with your decision of what that piece of meat is. It's the same way with the word. When I say chew on that for a while, it means you should taste it, test it. Is there too much fat in it? Too many tannins in it or whatever, you know, too many things that make it unpleasant to eat. The Father's words are very pleasant to eat. If you're an obedient fellow. On the other hand, if you are a criminal and a sinner and a heavy duty against the Father and you read it, it can be very condemning, can it? It's just like police. I'm not afraid when I meet police. Only those that are doing something wrong should be fearing the police. Of course, that's changed these days, but you know what I mean. I'll tell you this one thing. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.